Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, a podcast for and about trial lawyers. We tell the stories about trial lawyers who go to battle every day in courtrooms throughout the United States for injury victims. This is about their stories and their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Synergy allows trial lawyers to focus on what they do best by handling the difficult issues that arise in settlement, like troublesome lien resolution issues, Medicare secondary payer compliance, government benefit preservation techniques, and complex settlement consulting. Without further delay, here's another episode of Trial Lawyer View with Glenn Fair.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. In today's episode, I get the pleasure of speaking with Glenn Fair, a dynamic trial lawyer and former law enforcement officer with a passion for advocating for his clients. From serving in the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne Division to now winning accolades in Colorado courtrooms, Glenn brings a unique blend of military precision and legal acumen to his practice. As the founder of Oakmont Law Group, he is dedicated to providing personalized and aggressive representation to those in need. Join us as we delve into Glenn's journey from law enforcement to litigation and uncover the insights he's gained along the way, with a focus on his learns from his life before becoming a lawyer to outsourcing and using technology to its fullest. You'll get some great tips, including some key insights about voir dire. Glenn, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. I appreciate you taking the time to be with me today.
It's a pleasure being here, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
So in doing my research for the podcast, I know that your background spans from the Airborne Division to law enforcement to now practicing law. How has your experiences in the military and law enforcement influenced your approach to the handling of personal injury cases, particularly thinking in terms of discipline, leadership, and resilience?
So as a young man, I was, like many young men, I was a little lost and misguided, and thankfully I had the foresight to go into the Army, which is super helpful because I was not on a good path. Joined the 82nd Airborne Division when I signed up. I thought it would be cool to jump out of airplanes. And then, from there, what that really taught me was a couple things. Number one, it taught me that I can do hard things. I can do things that you think you can't do. Airborne schools got a lot of that in it. It taught me I can be disciplined. I know how to maintain discipline and continue to fight through. So that was super helpful. Once I got out, I did my 3 years and I got an honorable discharge. And then I went into ultimately law enforcement.
Well, I'm impressed because anybody that's willing to jump out of a perfectly good airplane, I'm always in awe of because it scares the living daylights out of me to do that. Now, I do some other crazy stuff like cycling and race cars too. But, you know, for whatever reason, jumping out of a plane, it actually made my palms a little sweaty thinking about it.
Nice. I didn't know that you did cars. I knew that you did the cycling and whatnot. I'm a big car fan myself.
Yeah, I actually instruct people on track. So I do my own driving my own car, and then I'm an instructor for HPD events at tracks all over the country. So it's actually quite fun.
That's really cool. Well, if you ever get out to High Plains Raceway in Colorado, let me know because that's where we go.
I have not been there, and I would love to do that because I love the idea of a little bit more altitude. You know, I do Sebring quite frequently because it's my home track here in Florida, and it's an incredible track, but that's a little bit different because it's very flat. I've done Road Atlanta, so I've gotten that experience of doing a little bit of elevation change, and that's pretty cool.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. But to get to the second part of your question about law enforcement. So, but by the time I got out of the military, I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do. Ultimately, I figured a good way to help people was to be in law enforcement, and so that's what I went to next. I spent 22 years serving my community in Carson City, Nevada area, and I ended up retiring a couple of years early. I got hurt in a training accident. which damaged my dominant hand and left me partially numb and with a loss of strength and range of motion that sadly is permanent. The good news is that those restrictions don't prevent me from being a lawyer. They just prevent me from being a law enforcement officer. And when I was in law enforcement, I did quite a few things. I was a standard patrolman. I drove a black and white every day and went to calls for service. I did canine for a while. I trained young officers as a field training officer. Eventually, I got promoted to sergeant, where I supervised officers. And I also was part of the Internal Affairs Division to do investigations when complaints came in against officers. And so that's that. And what that all taught me, what it really taught me was the key skill for lawyers is how to talk to people. How to talk to people is a huge skill. And something that sadly, I see a lot of young lawyers coming out of law school because we mentor people and we have internships at our firm. A lot of these younger folks have a really hard time talking with folks. And that's, I mean, that's like your number one trial lawyer skill is just to be able to talk to people and connect with them. So that's the big thing I've got out of that. Again, it also law enforcement reinforced that I can do hard things. I can be in extremely scary and dangerous situations and come out of it okay, which between law enforcement and the military has really helped me walking into a trial courtroom in front of a jury.
I'm sure. Well, one, thank you for all of your service because you've dedicated a good portion of your life to serving all of us, which is something I'm thankful for all those people that do that because it is a sacrifice. But what you just said actually sort of leads into the next question I was going to ask you about because I know from doing my research about your firm and about you is that you started your firm with the goal of improving client services for people that are injured. And I was wondering if you could share some strategies or practices you've implemented to better serve your clients and their individual needs. I suspect that part of that is about communication because that is seems to be one of the most critical things that is lacking oftentimes when you look at bar complaints, the typical bar complaints are because of a lack of communication, oftentimes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I when I got out of law school, I didn't finish law school until I was 50 years old. So for those of you who are older, don't say it's because I'm older, just do it. I started at 47, I graduated at 50. I opened my own firm at 51 after working for another firm for a year. One things I did learn in that other firm was how I wanted to practice law, and I realized that that's not how they practice law, and I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm just saying we had a difference of opinion. So when I started Oakmont Law Group, what I really wanted to do is I wanted to make sure my lawyers didn't have more than about 50 cases maximum each, because you can't run much more than that effectively, and you really can't get to know your clients if you've got more than that. And so what that ultimately breaks down to is better communication. We use FileVine as our case management system, and that's a key piece of our client communication. We use the hashtag system to generate reports, and my assistant reaches out every 2 weeks to every single client that we have who's treating and asks them how they're doing. Ask them, have they seen any doctors? Do they need an appointment with their lawyer? Whatever. And that usually goes out by text. It doesn't take very long to do it. For cases that are beyond the treating phase where we're pulling records together and whatnot, and that takes a long time, and negotiating liens and things, we check with the clients every 30 days. So there's that communication piece there. Something else we do is we do our very best, especially in litigation cases, make sure we go meet with the client in their home at least once, more often if necessary. It's really hard to tell somebody's story if you don't know it, if you don't know how they live their life. And so there's that, limiting the number of cases and really using a lot of the resources, that are out there. I'll let you ask about any specific resources.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I previously on this podcast I had his name is Joey Coleman, and he wrote a book about Never Lose a Client Again, and he had talked about just that communication piece being so critical, and we've adopted a lot of his methodologies and practices around customer experience, because we want to make sure that, like you, we're communicating with our clients, making sure we're aligning with what they want, what they need. So yeah, I mean, it'd be great, I think, to share with listeners what type of resources you guys have provided to your clients or used to help facilitate the best possible experience for someone that's been injured. Because I know personally, having been through a personal injury case myself, it's very difficult. You know, I mean, it's, and I'm a lawyer. I knew what was going on. For someone that has no clue whatsoever, and having been through something traumatic and being out of work and trying to coordinate medical care and recover, it's a tough time.
It really is. And our, as far as client communication goes, we have a letter that goes out. Basically, you know, we get the signed fee agreement back, and that's speaking of tools we use, all of our signature and everything's electronic. It's all through VineSign, which is kind of like DocuSign, and I'm sure there's others out there as well. Our clients are always welcome to come to our office if they want and meet us in person. Most of them just don't want to. They don't have the time. So we use VineSign to speed things along there. And once we get those fee agreements back, one of the first two things that go out to our clients is a letter. It's called our welcome letter. And the welcome letter kind of outlines for our clients, this is where we are in the case now, and this is how your case is probably going to progress. And it's an outline. We also send them what we call the social media letter. I lost a case at trial a year and a half ago because my client failed to follow the guidelines of the social media letter. And basically the letter says, if you don't want a jury to see it, don't put it on social media. It is in a nutshell. And then we've taken it even one step further than that. Just this morning, I had finished shooting a couple of videos where basically I speak in a video to our clients. The welcome video is about 18 minutes long and explains to them what they need to do, what not to do, and also talks about, you know, our check-ins and those things. So we've got some automation as far as that goes. We rely heavily on FileVine on the task list system. And so FileVine uses phases and tasks. And we have approximately 200 tasks for each case broken down and assigned by which person needs to get them. And so when a brand new case comes in and the person signs, the case manager or paralegal, you know, they make the change and that populates tasks out. A couple of the tasks for us that get populated out are things like, you know, order police reports. We get everybody's health insurance. So this is a huge task. And Jason really ties into what you do. One of our tasks is if health insurance is Medicare, TRICARE, VA, fully self-funded ERISA, they need to contact Synergy Settlement Systems. Synergy Settlement Services to have them run that case for us. Frequently, we get people, and when I say people, I'm talking about clients and other lawyers are going, well, you know, who do I talk to at Medicare? I don't waste my time doing that. I let you guys do that. And the fee structure is really, really reasonable. I'll leave it to you to discuss whatever that is. But the fee structure is reasonable and the clients love it because they're not really paying much unless they get a reduction. And we've got some insane reductions. I mean, we had a case, you know, a woman got a brain injury and her fully self-funded ERISA at a major U.S. corporation. Her lien was over $120,000. And you guys helped me get it down to 30 grand, which was wonderful. So, and Medicare, guys, if for those of you who are listening, don't deal with Medicare yourself. There's too many ways you can fail. Just call Synergy Settlement. Let them deal with it. They've got the experts. I've even called them on like Friday afternoon, right at the close of business, and got somebody on the phone to help me. So and you can reach out to me or Jason if you want to talk more about that. So we use those systems. And one of the big things I do, Jason, I keep my fingers out of the everyday pie. In other words, I don't go look to make sure the letters of representation went out. I've got a task system for that. There's checkups for that. My office manager monitors that. That's her job. So I don't have myself involved in the day-to-day. So those are some of the systems that really, really help. We have one more I'm going to mention real quick. We use Yossier for records retrieval. They're automated and we run it straight out of FileVine. It's super helpful. So lawyers, I'm going to sit here and talk until I run out of time or I stop breathing, one of the two things. I'll stop now and let you get to the next thing, Jason.
Well, it's interesting because it dovetails nicely into what I was going to ask you about, which is, I know from doing my research on you and your firm that you guys are interested in technology and deploying it, and I'm wondering if you're using AI at all to make your firm more efficient, or what technology you use, and maybe it's just FileVine simply because I know many firms are operating on that kind of technology, and it's pretty cool what it can do, as you just talked about a variety of things. But I'm just wondering if there are things that you can share with listeners that perhaps from a technology standpoint will help them operate more efficiently that you found.
Certainly. So we're in the Denver, Colorado area. So we're, Rocky Mountain High, we're at a mile high, which means we get some fairly severe winters. One of the first things we did technology-wise is every single one of our employees has their own laptop. And they have a docking station and screen set up at the office, and they have an identical docking station and screen set up at their house. Of course, we pay for all of that and the setup and all that. So if the weather's bad, if somebody's not feeling well, we take your computer, go home, work as much as you can. For the time you can't work, put in your PTO. That's fine. So that's one piece. And that's a real simple piece that anybody can do. If you're using desktops, you're behind the power curve. Get on laptops. And then the next thing we use AI, but we're very, very cautious with AI. I follow Bob Simon at Simon Law Group, and he seems to be all over the AI thing. And what we use for AI is basically what comes through FileVine. The reason I only use FileVine's AI in the law practice is because that AI system restricts itself to FileVine. It doesn't go outside. It doesn't do what they call hallucinate. In other words, it doesn't make things up. I'm sure your listeners, Jason, have heard of, attorneys getting reprimanded for turning in pleadings with cases that aren't even real, that an AI system made up. And FileVine, I'm assured, does not do that. So we use the AI in FileVine to parse out and go through our medical records, and it gives us the output dates of service, paid scales, summaries, futures, all of that. And that's all put in a very nice spot where we can click a button and get it downloaded to a document. And so that's how that works out for us. So there's that. I use AI for some things like writing job descriptions and whatnot, things that are non-legal. It goes back into what I know and what I don't know. I think I'm getting better at being a trial lawyer, getting better at running a law firm, but I'm outside the box on technology and whatnot. So I just let other people deal with that. I let my team deal with their jobs every day. I keep my focus where it needs to be in growing the company and trying cases.
Well, you raised two good points. I mean, from my research with chat and other AI is that if you're using it, and you're using it on chat's iteration of it, OpenAI, then the information you put in there is not secure. So obviously, if you're putting client information in there, you do want to use an instance like FileVine where it's a closed loop. But, there are things that ChatGPT can do and other AI types of solutions, like write a job description, which is, saves a lot of time if you have a starting point and you allow it to do that. So it's certainly a very good tool. I actually used it to edit the second edition of my first book that I'm getting ready to release sometime before the end of the year. And it really did a wonderful job in helping edit and do summaries and key tips that I've added to the book as part of the second edition. So there's certainly a lot of great uses for it. And I think we're going to see probably over the next 3 to 5 years, a lot of different things get incorporated into Microsoft, their Copilot that's already out there and other things that'll help us in the way we operate. And it's going to be cool to see, but it also presents risks, right? It always comes with that risk.
Absolutely. And that's what I tell my team is, even though we're using the internal AI system, proofread what comes out. Make sure your lawyer proofreads what comes out, just to make sure we don't look foolish in front of a judge. That's always a bad way to go is turn in one of your first pleadings and there's something wrong in there and the judge catches it. So then you look silly and you lose credibility.
Yep, it always the output always needs to be added. So, I wanted to ask you about Wadir because I know you've been recognized for your skills in that area, and I'm wondering what advice you would offer to other attorneys in that aspect of preparing for trial when the case is going to go to trial.
Certainly. And when I start talking about, my skills, this is stuff that I've taken from giants and copied them. I was very fortunate. I went to the University of Wyoming Law School, which is in Laramie, Wyoming. There are a lot of Spence graduates there. And one of the things University of Wyoming does is they have a voir dire competition at the beginning of every school year, every law school year. My wife and I entered that as incoming 1Ls and ended up winning it. And what it came down to was what I said back at the beginning of the podcast. Voir dire comes down to talking to people, listening to them, accepting what they have to say at face value, and asking other questions from that. So a couple things that I use in all my voir dires, I use the concept of brutal honesty, which I learned from Nick and Courtney Rowley. So I use that. Then I dovetail into what's called the please talk to me. Those two pieces take about a minute is all, and it kind of primes the jury for, you're trying to connect with them at that point and let them understand that you can talk to me. And something else I do in voir dire is I don't have my client in the room. And I got that from Nick Rowley, Gary Dordick, who are like, I don't have my client in the room. And the way I've dealt with that is I just tell the jury, I'm like, look, you saw my client just get up and leave. It's not because he's not interested, but we need to be brutally honest here. And I don't want you holding back something because my client's there because you think you might hurt his feelings. I'm like, me, I'm a lawyer. I was in law enforcement. I've been told I have no feelings. And so you don't have to worry about that. And as you can see, that kind of it's a little icebreaker and it really helps people be a little more comfortable with you. And then voir dire, I hit on and what I learned is you want to see how people feel about your bad facts. It's not the time to argue your case. It's the time to figure out how do people feel about your bad facts, and get other people talking about it. Regardless of the answers I get, I thank them and I sincerely thank them. I am so happy that they, I'm so happy that they answered me. An example is a trial I did about 2 years ago now. I told the jury, I said, at the end of this case, it's my opinion that the facts and the evidence are going to show this case is worth $3.5 million. How do you feel about that? And I had a gentleman who takes care of war wounded veterans who was irate at that. And he was very upset. And he's like, I disagree with that. I think you're wrong. I think you ambulance chasers are ruining America. And I sat there and I was truly honored that he would be so brutally honest with me. And I thanked him sincerely. Well, I'm not going to try to change his mind. I want to know, And what was nice was I was able to ask him the ultimate follow-up question. Can you tell me more about that? And let him go on again. And then ask the next great follow-up question. Who else feels like Mr. Smith? That's not his name. I just made that up. But, who else feels like Mr. Smith? And what it comes down to is really listening to how your jury feels. And I do think of them as my people. I think of them as my tribe and my community. Even when I've lost, that's how still how I think of them, because you want to have that connection. You want people to, you want them to talk to you because they talk and you'll get great stuff. And I can go on more, but I'll stop for a second, Jason. Because, like I said, as a lawyer, I just start talking and I get going. Next thing I know, a half hour's gone. So I'll stop myself every now and again, make it a little easier for you. Sorry if I'm talking too much.
That's great. Well, I actually it also lets me ask about I know that you got a recent $2.2 million verdict, which is a substantial result, and I'm curious, how all of this played into that. Was You think that that was tied somewhat to jury selection, or was it simply the facts of the case? And just wanted to, ask about that because that's a pretty good segue into that
Sure.
question.
Sure. And it's, I mean, the facts of the case were pretty good, but we had some bad facts. We had some bad facts. One of our bad facts was our client stopped treating at one point for 26 months. No treatment at all for 26 months. You know, so that was one of our bad facts. Another one of our bad facts was our clients is claustrophobic, so getting good MRIs were really tough. We did get some for his cervical and lumbar, thank goodness. And so that was tough. But another thing is our client did not get any injections, no ESIs, epidural steroid injections for his herniated disc in his spine, no surgeries. He didn't do any of that. So those are all really bad facts. So I had to deal with those in voir dire. And the way I deal with them in voir dire is I just asked him, I said, you know, suppose someone's supposed to go to the doctor. And they go to the doctor for a couple of months, you know, maybe they're getting better, maybe they're not. And finally, they're frustrated. They just stop going to the doctor. And then after a couple of years, they're still frustrated, so they go back to the doctor. You know, how do you feel about somebody who does that? And I had one person raise their hand, and I called on them, and they said, I think they're an idiot. I said, thank you. I really appreciate that. Who else feels like Mr. Smith? And two other hands went up. You know, I think that's really dumb, and here's why I think it's dumb. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, and I was sincere about that. I was so grateful that they were telling me who they are. You know, it also helped me identify the people who were going to listen. So there was that. And to get that type of result, so again, a lot of the stuff I do comes from Keith Mitnick, Nick Rowley, Courtney Rowley, the Trial by Human crew. I've gotten some great things from Mike Alder at Alder Law. Mike is a great guy. I'm just getting to know. And Gary Dornick. So a lot of what I'm telling you is from those sources. But for voir dire, you know, they hired a very well-respected, highly trained doctor to come in and say my client was only hurt for 4 to 6 weeks, and then he was fine. I was able to start setting that, setting up's the wrong word. I was able to clue the jury in that somebody like that's going to show up who's basically going to say our client's not really hurt. And my question I asked him in voir dire is, you know, how do you feel about judging the credibility of someone with a lot more education and knowledge than you? How do you feel about that? Because the county I was in was Adams County, Colorado. Very blue collar. Very blue collar. It's a lot of high school graduates, a lot of high school and two-year degrees, a handful of four-year degrees. And so that's an important question. So they start in voir dire with that. You know, I also talked to them about the gap in treatment, like I told you. And then there's a question that I ask about, you know, personal responsibility, basically who feels that lawsuits are brought by people who've had bad things happen to them. And then the opposite side of that is who feels that lawsuits are from people who don't want to take personal responsibility. And I got that from Chris Nicolason, who's a friend of mine. And his thing is, you know, if they say B, they're probably a defense juror. I don't know where Chris got it. So whoever owns that, please don't sue me. I'm just repeating it from a buddy, and it seems to work really good. And so, you know, so voir dire plays into all of that, identifying the people who shouldn't be on your jury, the people who aren't going to listen. Somebody who hears gap in treatment and says you're an idiot, they're not going to listen. I don't want them on my jury. So you attack it there, and then as you roll into opening, whatnot, you give them a little more and a little more. Long story short, by the time opening is done, you want to be ahead. That's when I got that from Keith Mitnick. And some of the stuff I did in opening was, you know, I let them know how much money I'm asking for. I talk about money in voir dire. I talk about money in opening. And I talk about it in closing and in rebuttal closing. I just make sure I get it out there. We're not hiding the football. And so, but the $2.2 million, the client, he suffered a disc herniation at L5-S1. He was just an exceptionally fit human being. I mean, he is the kind of guy who most men look at his physique and go, man, I'd like to have guns in a chest like that. He is just a really great guy. No past medical history. That was one of our good facts. He was 45 years old when the crash occurred. He had Kaiser for years. We looked through all his past Kaiser records. That's a big tip there, guys. Look at your client's past medical history early. Get it done early. You have to. And we looked at his 10 years priors. He only had like 6 years priors, and they were all for like colds and vaccinations. Great. That was easy. And so basically we spent our time and we told Corey's story. And Corey did give me permission to use his name and his case facts and whatnot with the public. He's a really good man. He's like, you know, if we can help somebody out, so help somebody else out through my experience, please do. Please do. And Corey, you know, this crash cost him a lot. Yes, he had a herniated disc L5-S1 pressing on the right side S1 nerve root. I can talk about that injury really well because I've got the exact same injury from when a drunk driver hit my wife and I 3 years ago. And so it helped to be able to understand where Corey's coming from. But here's the big thing. I spent a lot of time with Corey. You know, I took him out to dinner a couple of times. We sat in my office and chatted. We just did a few things together. And it wasn't this big complex thing. We just got to know each other. And that really helped me understand who he is, what type of a human being he is. One of the really interesting things about Corey is when he was a young man, he was in the rap scene and he went on tour with MC Hammer. I mean, how cool is that? They're doing singing and dancing and whatnot. But long story short, nobody thought that this case would settle. But nobody other than us thought this case was worth more than the $1 million policy limits. Nobody did. As far as I was concerned, I told the defense a week before trial, I'm going to ask for at least $2.5 million. That's what I'm going to ask for, at least $2.5 million. I don't hide the ball. I tell them what I'm going to do. And nobody believed me. Their best offer was $100 grand and basically told me in that jurisdiction with no surgery and refusing to care and a gap in treatment, you're going to lose this case or you're not going to beat our offer. California's a 998. In Colorado, it's called a statutory offer. Well, they were wrong. They were wrong because I was able to tell Corey's story, show what he lost. This crash changed his life, literally changed his life. I had pictures of him a month before the crash, and then the jury could see with their own eyes what he looked like 4 years later. And that was fairly compelling. But the point is, for the listeners, tell your client's story. Acknowledge your bad facts. Deal with them. Tell their story. Corey lost his marriage because of this case. He lost one of his two businesses because of this case. And so you just got to tell their story. And I'm glad to talk to others about this. I know we'll get into that later, Jason. And so long story short, the jury gave us $2.2 million. Colorado has 9% statutory interest from the date of the incident, which is about another $800 grand. And so currently right now, we're trying to get farmers to pay the whole $3 million judgment on their $1 million policy. And I've already talked to a great bad faith lawyer just to make sure I'm on track there. I caught myself yammering again. Jason, go ahead.
No, great result, and it's a great story. And yeah, that kind of advice is exactly what I think, you know, many of our listeners tunes in for, is, you know, getting little tips that make you better, right? Taking those different, you know, types of approaches. Like I've Keith Mitnick's been on the podcast. I know Keith, know Nick and Rowley, and I some of the others that you've mentioned, and I've heard other, you know, people that have been on the podcast talk about using those techniques and proving out with a verdict like you were able to achieve for your client, which ultimately is what this is all about, helping that injured party cope with what's happened to them, because unfortunately money is the only justice we have when someone injures us in that way.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I told the jury. That's what I told them at the beginning of the case in opening. You know, the piece with Keith Mitnick, you know, I know it's a lot of money, but that's a lot of hurt and a lot of damage for a lot of time. Thank you, Keith, for that. And in the end, when we're talking about money in depth, I just let him know, it's like, you know, I wish we could go to the defendants and say, hey, give him a new lumbar spine, please. Give him a new cervical spine so he can go back to working out and living his life. Sadly, I can't do that. The language of the justice system is money. I wish I could ask you for a new back for him, but I can't. All I can ask for is to compensate him for what was taken away through no fault of his own. Another Keith Mitnick piece. And it's just, you know, and the jury, they didn't buy the defense's nonsense. The defense said the case was only worth $30,000 in their closing, and they still gave us a very large verdict. And I'm still humbled that it happens. And I want to mention one more person, if it's cool. This was a lumbar disc injury with no injections and no surgery. Keith Mitnick, I know, tried a couple of these about 3 years ago back to back and basically got $1 million verdicts in both of them. Bob Simon in California is doing the same thing. And listening to Keith and listening to Bob gave me the courage to go, yeah, that disc is never going to be the same. It physically will never be the same. And they have to pay for that. And gave me the courage to ask for that kind of money for a herniated disc with no surgery. So thank you to those guys. Go ahead, Jason. I'll stop now.
Well, so last question as we wrap up here. I know from us talking before that you think somewhat outside the box. We had talked a long while back about qualified settlement funds and attorney fee deferral, but I did want to ask you about that. I'm wondering what types of different cutting-edge ways that you've developed within your firm to make it more efficient and drive better results for clients ultimately.
So we are on a task list system, okay? I'm sure you've heard of things called Kanban boards. If you haven't, look it up. It's a lot for software development and whatnot. So I started thinking about Kanban boards, which shows us very quickly where things are at a certain phase. So as the managing director, I need to be able to look at cases or look at our caseload and go, okay, where are we at? How come these settlement opportunities haven't gone out yet? And then we call them settlement opportunities. The only thing we demand is a jury trial under the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution. Everything else is an offer to settle. I stole that from Nick Rowley to give full credit. But at any rate, so we've got a system in place that we follow, and I've spent a year tweaking it and getting it down to the way I want it, so that we get tasks, we get reminders, and that we have a system in place. So here's what part of what that system looks like. I use Loom to do screen recording. One of my teacher friends told me about it. When somebody starts working at Oakmont, I have 41 modules that take about 7 hours to go through. And those 41 modules teach our new people what's the philosophy of Oakmont? How do we handle things? How do you use the case management system? How do you answer the phone? How do you do the mail? All the basics. So everybody's trained the same way. Everybody's trained the same way. Then once everybody's trained the same way, we leverage our technology to minimize human input. If it's a letter we write all the time, it's automated. FileVine has a, it's called DocGen, I think it is. And I know Clio's got some and others have some. If you're doing a task more than once a month, you need to automate that task. So all of our letters of representation are automated. You put in the information, you click the button, it pulls out a form letter. All you got to do is edit the letter and fax it or mail it. Our fee agreement's the same way. Our fee agreement runs through lead docket. I can send a fee agreement out from the time I hang up the phone talking to somebody who said, "Yeah, I want your fee agreement," to the time they have it in their hands, less than 3 minutes. It's easy. And they can get it by text or by their computer. So we've leveraged technology that way. So that's getting them onboarded. Once they're onboarded, we talk about VineSign. We can have them sign their HIPAAs and all that. In fact, the documents that they sign for Synergy, authorizing you guys to do work for them, we do all that versus from VineSign, and we've never gotten any pushback from Medicare or TRICARE or anybody. And if we have, your guys have handled it. I don't know of any, though. So we leverage technology that way. Now, we're a trial firm, and that seems almost like duh, but no, we're a trial firm. We don't file lawsuits with the purpose of increasing settlement values. We start every case like we're going to file a lawsuit. So part of that is getting those medical records, getting those past medical records. We use VineSign's AI analysis for medical records, and that gets dumped out into a format that I can literally click a button, and it pulls it onto a sheet of paper where I can read it. I'm 57 years old now. My associate, who's 30-something, she can read everything on the screen. My wife, who's about 40, she can read everything on the screen. That's just not me. So I can use the AI to go through my medical records real quick and give me the highlights. So we've got that way. Our settlement opportunities, we don't mail those out anymore. We haven't mailed out a settlement opportunity to an insurance carrier in 3 years. They all go by email. They're email or fax, and that's it. It's kind of funny. In 3 years, they've never lost one. Amazing how that works. And so we just, like I said, if it's something that we're doing more than once, there's a system for it. You have to have your systems in place, and you've got to tweak those. Good book for you business owners is Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. Great book in helping me stay in the managing director trial lead trial lawyer box, just like it helps you, Jason, stay in the CEO box and make sure things go. I'm not dealing with stuff like blog posts. And so it's super important to identify your systems. And yes, guys and gals, it takes a long time, but it's worth it. My last two hires, you know how much time I spent with them after the first interview? They got like a half hour of my time in their first couple of days, and the rest of the time was spent with their supervisors, watching videos and learning. And I was able to keep running the firm. So there's a lot of tech out there. Try what works for you. I love the stuff. I know I'm an older guy, but I love technology. And when the new stuff comes, I'm always trying it. So I just, you know, give it a try. Just make sure it falls with your ethics rules. Make sure if you're going to sign on to AI, find out where that AI machine is getting its data from so you don't get in trouble like some of the lawyers you've heard about.
Well, that was some really excellent advice. You know, the idea of running your firm efficiently so that you're delivering for your clients is something of a passion for me, because part of what we do allows firms to, you know, free their staff from dealing with ERISA or Medicare, you know, all those things, because, you know, whether it's technology or whether it's, you know, outsourcing to experts like us, leveraging that to make your firm operate optimally ultimately drives the best customer experience ultimately for your injured party client, which is how the next case comes in for you guys. So, you know, that mindset of running the firm the way you are running the firm is one that I'm very passionate about for all the firms out there to embrace that kind of thinking, because I think that is really the future.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, and it's something else that you guys have done for me. You know, I've got a client who's a young woman who's got a disc herniation. And, you know, the VI tendered, they just paid their $100,000, and I've got a quarter mil on the UIM. And UIM's like, well, I don't know, this and that. And so I talked to the client. I'm like, look, I need to send you to an independent medical exam, which I only use for me. It's technically not the right term, but the Rule 35 exam. I can send you to that person. This is what it's going to cost and whatnot, and we'll see what they have to say. And then Jeff Faulkner in your office says, hey, Glenn, you know, we do a, we do that here at Synergy. I'm like, what? Yeah, we do that at Synergy. So I said, I checked with the client. She's like, yeah, it's going to be like a fifth of the cost. That's 20% of what a doctor's going to charge. And I just got that report yesterday, and it's a seven-figure futures report that an expert did. And so here's what that saved me. I spent 15 minutes talking to my client. My team sent everything to Synergy that they needed. And I had that report with like 20 minutes of my work total, which now should be able to get it so we can send it to the UIM and have them pay. That's a great example of leveraging your time. I let other people do the hard work. I let Yossi deal with my medical bills and records. I let Synergy deal with all of my difficult health insurance people. If you don't have a state, like if you're Medicaid and your state's not super friendly like ours is, they can do that as well. I don't use Jason for Medicaid. And the reason I don't is Colorado law, basically we get a 25% discount and there's not much arguing with it. So I'm not going to, you know, I mean, Jason's fees are low, but 25% for no money is even better than that. And so that's the only one I don't send over, but almost everything else goes through these guys because it's worth it.
Yeah. And the idea of having the right people that you partner with that can get the right results for your client and make your firm operate more efficiently, whether it's us or whatever partners are out there. I think the more you leverage that, and the more you leverage the technology around all of this, is the best way to make your firm operate efficiently and optimally.
Awesome. Absolutely.
So, Glenn, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they have any questions about things that you've talked about today or happen to have a case they want to co-counsel or refer to you in Colorado?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is through email. My email is Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, it's two N's. So Glenn at Oakmont.law. So it's Glenn with two N's at Oakmont.law. I actually have an assistant who runs through my email, so make sure to tell them how you heard about me so the email actually gets to me. I don't deal with all the marketing emails. That's another hack, and, you know, use a VA to go through your emails. But you can also call our office at 720-645-1123 to get an appointment with me. You'll need to speak with my office manager, Jana. Just let her know how you heard of me and what you want to do. I am happy to pro-hoc into venues that will allow it to come help you try a case. I'm even happier to just talk with you on the phone for a half hour, 45 minutes, and tell you what you need to do to get your case settled or handled, and you keep all the money. I'm all about that. I mean, people have given me well, what I consider millions of dollars worth of free advice, I'm willing to pass that on. But if we just can't, you need me, I'm here. Call me. Let's talk about it.
Well, we'll include your contact information in the show notes for listeners to today's episode. And thank you, Glenn, for the gift of your time today. I appreciate you being here, and we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer Review.
Been a pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoyed today's discussion and encourage you to tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights about your practice. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy Settlement Services. Visit synergysettlements.com to learn more about how we allow trial lawyers to focus on what they do best.